today's class, what I've chosen to do, a topic, to try and take, you know, for a little bit, we're going to take some topics and discuss them. What we do is we take the laws of the laws that apply to a certain commandment or to a certain mitzvah, and through the laws we show what the spiritual content of that particular commandment is, which is a little bit of a different twist, which is also very important because it gives a certain sense of value to the Jewish laws, meaning we study them from one way, which is basically going through them and memorizing them and knowing how to do things. But now what we're going to do is we're going to choose a mitzvah. We're going to talk about mezuzah, okay? And we'll talk about different laws that apply to it, and we'll see what the spiritual side of those laws are. Okay, we did it last week, we did it with the Shema, and I think it was quite nice. And I would like to do it with the mezuzah as well. Okay, so we're going to start with mezuzah. We're going to talk about a few selected laws. The first point that I want to bring up is that in the mezuzah, there is on the outside, if you see, every mezuzah, there's one of the Almighty's names. The Almighty has many names. One of His names is Shin Dalet Yud. Okay? So if you look on the outside, it says Shin Dalet Yud. Alright? So the question is, what's the significance specifically of that name in relation to the concept of mezuzah? Why specifically Shin Dalet Yud? Now, another interesting point about the mezuzah is that it's placed on the outside of the room. Right? Whenever you have a mezuzah, it's always placed on the outside of the room. It's never placed on the inside of the house. When you close the door, you put the mezuzah and you put it when you walk in, so that you kiss it and you walk into the house. So what's the significance of having the mezuzah on the outside? Right. Why does the mezuzah have to be on the outside? The third question we're going to ask is that the law is that you first have to build the house, and only afterwards do you place the mezuzah. So for example, let's say you were in the door business. Okay, I have a great idea for you. You know how we have kosher wine, where they have these neat tzitzit things, they sell like tzitzit with t-shirts with tzitzit on them already? Or like, you know, sukkah, would be great. You go to like, you know, some type of manufacturer of doors and just have like it manufactured with the mezuzah, designer style, to fit exactly the molding and the whole thing. But that can't be. Right? You have to first have the house, and you have to have all the rooms intact, and only afterwards can you place the mezuzah and make the blessing. So here, the third question is, why only afterwards is the mezuzah placed? Another point that we're going to discuss is a sukkah. We all have experienced sukkah, the holiday where we sit outside under the trees, and we do not put there's a specific law that do not put a mezuzah on a sukkah. Right? So what's the significance of that? In addition, the doorpost that we speak about that the mezuzah is placed on has to have at least three posts. Two is not enough. So three posts, from there you start the responsibility of mezuzah. For example, if my doorpost is built in such a way where it doesn't have three posts, let's say it's in a curved fashion, or it'll have one post and then another wall following it through, or something to that extent, it won't be obligated in the mezuzah. You have to have at least two posts on the side and one on top in order to be obligated in the mezuzah. The three posts have to be have a certain size. If it's too small, the three posts don't count. There's a certain significance that the mezuzah has to place on the three posts specifically.
The
door frame, for example, would have to be it has to have three of the door frames in order for it to have. In addition, not only that, but it has to be placed on the top third of the frame of the doorpost. If you notice, every mezuzah that you walk in, it's always going to be on the top third. You divide the doorpost into three, and on the top third is the mezuzah. Okay, so really quickly, we'll just run through the questions again. First point is, why specifically the name of Shin Dalet Yud by the mezuzah? What does that name signify? The name Shaddai, what is the significance of that name of the Almighty as opposed to other ones? The second one is, why is the mezuzah placed on the outside? The third question is, Only after you have the house built do you go ahead and place the mezuzah, as opposed to placing it first on the doorpost and then, you know, attaching it. Fourth question is, why is the sukkah not have and not obligated in a mezuzah? The fifth question is, why three posts are necessary in the door frame in order to be chayav in mezuzah, and why on the top third? We're going to veer off for a moment onto a little bit of a tangent. I'm going to read to you a Gemara in Avodah Zarah, a very fascinating Gemara, which most probably you have, you know, it's definitely something that's a little bit of a different twist, not your run-of-the-mill Gemara and case that we're used to. Okay, the Gemara is in Avodah Zarah. It discusses somebody named Rabbi Eliezer ben Zurdia. Rabbi Eliezer ben Zurdia, that was his name. Right? And I'm going to read the English. They said about Rabbi Eliezer ben Zurdia that he did not leave. He had a certain terrible part of him that he had frequented himself by certain women that weren't appropriate. And our sages tell us that he was an expert in that line of work. So the Gemara says that he was, you know, well known for his skill. So at one point, there's that one time that he heard about a specific woman who lived overseas in a specific city. Her name, you know, had traveled before her, so to speak. She said that the price that she had taken was a purse of dinar coins. A whole pouch of coins was her payment that she held, you know, responsible for what it is that she did. Now, what happened is that our sages say Eliezer took a purse of dinar coins and went towards her. The sages say that he crossed seven rivers along the way for her sake. The Gemara says, "Va'avar aleha shiv'a neharot." Seven rivers he crossed in order. He was so dedicated to sinning, he was so passionate about what he was, you know, focused on doing, that he was willing not only to pay this tremendous price of the purse, you know, of coins, but he was also willing to cross seven rivers. It says at one point, finally, you know, he gets to the person that he is awaiting, and she breathes out air. And she says to him, she wants to make sure that he's going to stay a sinner constantly, and that he doesn't have any concept of repentance. So she breathes out air, and she says to him, just as the air that I have breathed out, that has emanated from me, will not go back to its source, so too you, Eliezer ben Zurdia, will not go back to your source. That's what she says to him, right? She says, just like the air that I have breathed will not go back to where it has come from, so too you have no chance of repenting, and you won't be able to go back to your source. What she was saying was, you're such a big sinner, you're so seeped in sin that you don't have any hope of going back to your makom. Now, we're obviously talking about someone that's really, you know, really passionate and dedicated to the sin that he's involved with. He's willing to pay all this money. He's willing to cross seven rivers. It's not like today, you basically get faxed in. You know, you buy your ticket and go. So he was really somebody that was sincere about it. What would we have thought his reaction was? Maybe he would have shrugged it off. You know, it must have taken him a month or two to get to the point where he was. It says that, what did he do? He immediately turned around and he walked out to the mountain and foothills, and he prayed on them. He said, "Mountain and foothills, beseech mercy for me. Please ask for mercy." And he turned to the sun, and he turned to all aspects of creation. They all said, "Before we ask for mercy for you, we have to ask for ourselves." So our sages say that he was so sad about what had happened, about what level he'd reached, that he'd placed his head down in between his knees, and he had cried to such a point that he had died. He cried so much, he had so much remorse, that he had actually created a situation where he was did such a strong tshuva, such a strong repentance, that he passed away in his sorrow. Now, the story says that a heavenly voice came out, and it says the following: Rabbi Eliezer ben Zurdia has now been ready for the life of the world to come. It says Rabbi Eliezer ben Zurdia, because he did tshuva so strong, but he now had attained his place in the world to come. So we see a very interesting aspect. We see a person on one hand is clearly seeped, you know, in sin. There's no question about it. And he's so passionate about it. He's willing to pay for it. He's willing to really go through anything to attain what it is. And he has, somebody says something to him that was intended as an insult. Our sages, when they explain this Gemara, they say that she wanted him to sin and to continue with the act that he was going to do. So she said those words in order to insult him, to really push him down. But he took what she said and said, this is the point I had reached. He took that one moment of where she said something and he turned it around and used it for his benefit, and that was able to push him to such a level where a heavenly voice comes out and says, your tshuva, your repentance is accepted. But not only is it accepted, but you have a spot in the world to come. So we see from here a very fundamental aspect, that there could be a point in a person's life where all you need is a moment of clarity in order for a person to take a certain strong path. Meaning, Rabbi Eliezer ben Dordia, he was called Rabbi Eliezer ben Dordia. It starts off calling him Eliezer ben Dordia, and his name turns into Rabbi Eliezer ben Dordia. You have here a moment, a person who has a moment of clarity, and from that moment of clarity, that is able to push them to a point where they are able to actually embark on a new path. Now, in front of you, you have the Gemarot that I would, this I would like to read together. This is a Gemara in Avodah Zarah. You see here, 11a. You have it? I took your copy. Okay. You don't mind changing the name? Okay. What we're saying is a moment of clarity is in many instances enough for a person who's sensitive to it to help them embark on their own path. Now, we've heard of Unkelus, right? The Pirush on the Chumash, Unkelus. So let's read a little bit about Unkelus and where he came from. Unkelus, the son of Clunimus, converted to Judaism. He was a Roman, and he was actually had a high stature there. You see it on the left, where it says Unkelus. Here, see where I'm pointing? Yeah. Okay. Unkelus, the son of Clunimus, converted to Judaism. The Caesar sent a troop of Romans after him, but Unkelus enticed them by citing verses of the Torah, and they converted. So the Romans, the Caesar himself, imagine, the Caesar in all his glory, was saddened at the fact that Unkelus had converted, and he sent a whole emissary to come and bring him back. So he met them, and he told them verses of Torah, and the people stayed and converted. The Caesar then sent another troop of Romans after him. He told the troops, don't say anything to him, right? But as they were taking him along with them, they were a group, they captured him. He said to them, let me tell you something trivial. And he starts telling them about a certain person who was holding standing in front of the other, the duksa in front of the hegemona, and the hegemona in front of the king, right? And they're talking about the king holding a torch. Now, would the king hold a torch before ordinary people? He entices them in certain words, and then he goes on to say, he points out the difference between the Romans and Judaism, and then they ended up converting as well. They all converted to Judaism. Now, look, skip to the bottom, which is the Caesar then sent another troop after him. See it? The Caesar, it's about like 8-10 lines at the bottom. The Caesar then sent another troop after him and instructed them, do not discuss anything with him. As they were taking him along with them, they captured him. They're dragging him out of the house. He saw a mezuzah that was fixed on a doorway. He put his hand on it, right, and to kiss it as he's out. Imagine the scene. Troops come into Jerusalem. They conquer this guy, you know, there's all these tough Roman-looking guys. They tie him up. They hold him. As they're pulling him out of the door, he squeezes his hand out, kisses the mezuzah. And so it says, he pointed out to them, he put his hand in the mezuzah, and he said to them, what is this? They said, we don't know what this is. You tell us what it is. So he explained to them, this is how the Almighty protects us. And he says, the way of the world is that a king of flesh and blood sits inside his palace, and his servants guard him from the outside. But the Holy One, blessed is he, his servants are inside, while he guards them from the outside. Right? So he puts his hand on the mezuzah, and he says, now what do you think this is? They say, well, we don't know. You're the Jew. Because they're not talking to him, right? They don't ask anything. They know better. They already have a few sets of friends that have, you know, converted and now are sitting in yeshiva and learning. So they don't want to hit the same, you know, their parents are getting upset at them and all that kind of stuff, you know, like coming to Israel and throwing out. So they don't want that. So they're not talking to him. So that as they're dragging him out, he's not kicking or anything, he sticks his hand on the mezuzah, and he says to him, what do you think this is? And they're inside, they were burning. You know, like, wonder what that is, what is that? Who knows what it is on? He says, well, you know, the general way is when the people are inside, and the king, you know, the people stay on the outside and they protect the king from the inside. But in Judaism, it's different. The king or the mezuzah is outside, and he protects the people inside. What happens at the end? They too converted to Judaism. And it says at the end, the Caesar did not send after him again. So, we have here, clearly, right, a situation where a person passes by a mezuzah and puts his hand on it and merely says what the significance of the mezuzah is. But it's a moment, right? The mezuzah is intended to be a moment to give a person a sense of clarity. And we see that when that's taken in the right way, you know, Unkelus puts his hands on the mezuzah. Unkelus puts his hands on the mezuzah and he tells the Romans, you know, what it is about, and they too converted to Judaism. So we were talking about Rabbi Elazar ben Dodia, that he had a moment of clarity and that made him change his path. We see the mezuzah's point, or the essence of it, is that moment. And that's how Unkelus took it. This is something for me to remember. Hey, God's protecting me. God is watching me when I'm inside. I'm not watching him when he's inside. Right? That is, in a sense, what the essence of the mezuzah is to give a person, even for just a moment, the sign of clarity to be able to refocus. You have a question? Okay, let's proceed for a second. Now, there's a place in behind the Kotel, is a big stone. It's called Evan Shetiyah. Okay, what's Evan Shetiyah? Evan Shetiyah is the actual place where the Almighty created the world from. It says the Almighty sort of created the world from one stone and then it spread out. So the place where the Almighty created the world is called Evan Shetiyah. Now, on the Evan Shetiyah, who knows what's resting upon the Evan Shetiyah? Okay, that's today. But in the times of the temple, what was there? It was Kodesh Kodeshim, right? But what was specifically on the Evan Shetiyah? The Ark. Inside the Ark were the Ten Commandments. Okay? So you have a setup here. You have the temple, and you have, inside the temple, you have the Holy of Holies, and you have the stone where the Almighty created the world from, and on that stone, what is sitting? Is sitting the Ark and the Ten Commandments. Now, interestingly enough, our sages tell us that the Ten Commandments acted as a mezuzah for the temple. The Ten Commandments acted as a mezuzah, they acted as a mezuzah for the temple. Now, with the understanding of this is the following: what is the purpose of the temple? The purpose of the temple in the Jewish in the Jewish lifestyle was three times a year one was commanded to come to Jerusalem. You left everything, and for three times out of the year you made like a pilgrimage. You went to Jerusalem with your family, and you went to the temple. The temple had miracles going on constantly. When you went to the temple, you were able for a moment to be like, you know how America has embassies in every nation? They have the, what's it called? The council, right? You know, I'm talking about like every country has its own like domain, you know, where you go to, for example, you go to the old city, you go to the Arab quarters here and you go to the U.S. council. And over there is the embassy, right? Every country has its own embassy, and when you're in that embassy, it is as if you're in that country, right? So if you were to run too fast in the American embassy in the Arab quarters, you might get a ticket or something like that. So here too, the temple was like the embassy of the Almighty down on this world. Meaning when you were there, you weren't in the realm of this world, you were in a place, you were in the embassy of the heavens. That's why there were constant miracles going on. Our sages say, for example, a fire in the form of a lion would come down and burn the food on the altar. It said that, for example, there were all types of different miracles that used to come by. When you would see that, for that instant, for that holiday, you would get a glimpse, which is, you know, it was just a glimpse of what it is in the heavens, in a sense, and then you would go back and take it with you. So the purpose of the temple is to give a person a sense of focus, and then so that he's able to take it with him onto his daily life. So when we take that a step further, within the temple itself, where did all the kedusha, all the sanctity, emanate from? If you want to take a place in the temple that God's presence was the most, so to speak, and where the sanctity came out from, that was the Holy of Holies. It was from there that everything emanated, and then it sort of found its way out. For example, I'll give you an example to what I'm talking about. It says that Shlomo HaMelech, with his wisdom, he was able to plant in Jerusalem trees and grow fruits that would only grow in specific parts of the world. How did he do that? You need a certain climate, you need a certain earth. So it says that Shlomo HaMelech knew that under the temple there are certain, we'll call them almost like tunnels, but they're not really tunnels, they're just energy tunnels in a way, that are plugged in to certain countries. So the country will receive sustenance from a certain place in the temple. So Shlomo HaMelech, for example, knew there was a certain fruit that would only grow, let's say, in Africa. So he knew where that energy tunnel was under the temple, and he would plant the seed of a tree that would only grow in Africa, and it would grow here too, around Jerusalem. Because again, everything emanated out from the temple. And it all started from the Kodesh HaKodeshim, from the Holy of Holies. It was in that place. And in the Holy of Holies was the Ark, which was resemblance of the mezuzah. Because the point of that was, it created, it was the channel that brought down the aspect of Emunah to the entire world. And that in a sense was what the purpose of the mezuzah is. The purpose of the mezuzah is to create an awareness of oneness of God, but to push it forth to the rest of the world. Okay? We'll see soon that what the mezuzah has the power to do is that the mezuzah has the power to create that within the place that it's protecting is the heir of Israel. Our sages tell us that just as the Holy of Holies was able to push out sanctity into the world, and it all happened through the Holy of Holies and the Ark and the commandments that were there, the Ten Commandments were there, so too the mezuzah. The mezuzah, what it does is, it acts as a Holy of Holies, it acts as the Ten Commandments that pulls the holiness of Israel into the house where it's protecting. So they both have the same message. So when we say, when our sages tell us that the mezuzah of the temple was in the Holy of Holies, in a sense what they're pointing out to us is that you have a function of the mezuzah. What it does is, its job is through sanctity to change the atmosphere of the place where it is. And it creates an atmosphere of Israel. Now, what does that mean? You know how we say that the air of Israel makes a person wiser? Right? It gives a certain sense of clarity. Many people, when they want to grow spiritually, they choose specifically to come to Israel. You know any people like that? Right? The significance of that is very simple. It's because the air of Israel makes a place wiser. So when the mezuzah is acted upon and created in the right way, what does it mean? That it creates an atmosphere of Israel within the house. It creates a certain sense of clarity in the house. So just as the Holy of Holies pushed out, like we saw with Shlomo HaMelech, and like we saw with what the point of the temple was in itself, to create clarity, so too does the mezuzah, when performed correctly and done with the proper intentions, creates a sense of clarity within the house that it's protecting, and then spread it out, right? Because he was a messenger of the Jewish people. Exactly. It's unbelievable. Our sages say clearly that the mezuzah of the temple was the Ten Commandments, but they use the word mezuzah. So you see what the point of mezuzah is. Mezuzah, the concept is to bring down sanctity of Israel into the place. That's why it says a place that has mezuzah has the atmosphere of Israel in it. Has the air of Israel within it. And you feel that sometimes. Sometimes you can go to a place in Chutz La'aretz, right? But you feel like the sanctity of the place is different. Okay? And this all ties into the fact that the Beit HaMikdash itself, the temple, its whole focus was what? Was to give you a glimpse of, you know, the heavens. You'd come there 3 times a year, stay for a little bit, and go back home. You'd get a glimpse of this spiritual world. That's the exact purpose of mezuzah. mezuzah is for a moment when you pass by to get a glimpse of focus. Alright. Now we'll talk about, we're going to talk a little bit about what the fourth question we were asking about the sukkah. Why is it that a sukkah is patur from mezuzah? So interestingly enough, really to understand this concept, we have to point out certain similarities that a sukkah has and that a mezuzah has. First of all, in order to make a mezuzah kosher, it has to have at least three walls. Interesting, where have we seen the number three? By a mezuzah. That what? That it has to have three door, has to have three posts, right? In order for it to be able to be kosher. Like we said, we started off, that if it has two, or it just has, you know, a side post or something like that, it's not a good entrance. That doesn't constitute an entrance that necessitates a mezuzah. It has to have three. What's the significance of three? So if we think for a minute, if we think for a moment, when something happens to you once, you might not pay attention to it. If something happens to you twice, maybe you'll raise an eyebrow. But if something happens to you three times, the same thing, then you'll already say, you know, there's something behind this, right? If you're parking, or you're waiting by a red light, and mistakenly, a guy taps the back bumper of your car. So you might not even turn around. If he does it twice, you unroll, you win, you know, you look at it. But if he does, if three times they hit the back bumper of your car, you're getting out of the car. Right? Because we all know that. So when something happens three times consecutively, three is the number that shows that something has really been focused from the heavens. The Maharal points this point out. He says that the Maharal says that when something resembles three, the number three is in relation to the hand of the Almighty directing it. So, for example, when we say that a mezuzah has to be placed on three, on a doorpost that has three, because the whole point of the mezuzah, again, is to help us focus, right, to get a glimpse of the spiritual realm, and to see the hand of the Almighty connected. So it doesn't, we wouldn't put it on something that's two. We need a doorpost that has three in order to bring that message through. The sukkah is the exact thing. What does the sukkah do? The sukkah tells us to step out of our house and go into this, you know, raggedy, made-up compartment that has on top of it these trees, because the concept of sukkah is for a person to step out of his materialism and then to handle, you know, the things that God gives you correctly, and to be able to sit in a sukkah. You walk out from your comfortable house and you walk into this little shack, you know, with three walls, imagine. And and for those days, those 7 days of Sukkot, you're sitting down and focusing about how much and where exactly is the materialistic place in this world. So the reason Sukkah doesn't need a mezuzah is because it within itself has all the messages of Sukkah, of mezuzah in it. You don't need to reiterate it because the whole thing stands for mezuzah. Mezuzah is to catch a glimpse and focus of this world. When you step out of your materialistic world and go into the sukkah, it's all there. There's no need for it. That's why you don't have a mezuzah in the sukkah. Now, interestingly enough, just to tie this in with what we were saying beforehand, in addition, the Zohar says that when you go into a sukkah, once again, you are in the air of Israel, no matter where you are. So we see the exact same theme of Eretz Yisrael, you know, popping up with this concept of mezuzah, that it has the power to draw in the sanctity of the sukkah. Now, what is the name? What does the name of Shin Dalet Yud stand for? So what does the name Shin Dalet Yud Shaddai? Where does it come from? So it comes from the following. It appears in the Chumash as following, that the name Shaddai comes from God's attribute to put a stop on the growth of materialism, or to only use it properly. I'll tell you what the verse says. Shaddai stands for She'amar Le'olamo Dai. Split the name in half. Shin is She'amar Le'olamo Dai. What does She'amar Le'olamo Dai mean? It means he who told the world to stop. When God was creating the world was expanding and expanding and expanding and growing and growing. Finally, God used this name of Shaddai, of Shin Dalet Yud, and told the world up until this point, you don't need any more to serve my purpose. What you have here is sufficient to bring out the name of the Almighty, to sanctify my name. So why is the name of Shin Dal Hajud specifically placed on the outside of mezuzah? So when you walk into your house, you walk in with the notion of Shaddai, Shamah L'Olam Adai, that God told the world, up until this point is where you have to go. Whatever you have here is just fine. You don't need anything else. When a person walks into this house and he puts his hand on the mezuzah and sees the Shin Dal Hajud, and that's the attribute, that's the name of the Almighty that's used to create a sense of what God has placed before you is enough, that it allows, once again, a person to get a glimpse, that it allows a person to get a sense of focus before he enters the house, that whatever I have here is what I'm supposed to have and is enough. Because it's the same name that God used to stop the growth of the world. The world, like we said, was expanding and expanding, and God used the name Shaddai and said, this is it. This is all you need to serve the purpose. So before you walk into the house, again, it's an instant of focus. And we saw how powerful, you know, an instant of focus is. With Unculus, he was able to get them to convert just by placing his hand on the mezuzah. Or we saw by Ablezo ben Dordia, she said one word to him, and that was able to cause him to change. It's so funny because the mezuzah is like one of the mitzvot that's constantly passed on. There's no commandment, for example, to kiss it all the time. But definitely, you see clearly that it's geared towards creating a sense of focus. Because every time you approach one, you're supposed to, for a moment, think about, you know, the sense of growth that it's supposed to bring out. My father, he works in construction and builds, like, you know, houses and buildings and stuff like that in New York. And he had a worker once that was painting a house. It's a true story. So my father tells him, paint the house, but the doorpost, don't touch don't touch that little box over there. So it lasted for a little bit. After a while, the guy comes up to my father and says, yeah, look, I'm painting, and I was able to paint the little box. I painted exactly behind the box. Everything was fine. So my father says to him, what are you doing? I asked you not to touch. He says, no, it's okay. I took off the little box. I took off the instructions that were inside. Put the back of the box back on the doorpost and took the instructions and threw them out. I know how to put it on straight. You know, some are tilted, some are straight. You know, some houses are tilted and straight. My father said, no, please don't paint anymore. That would be better. You know, you're right. Every house, one thing that they have is a mezuzah. One thing that they have is true, is a mezuzah. Okay, now let's go on for a little bit. The Mechilta says as follows. It says very interesting. It says that when the Jewish people, the Mechilta writes that when the Jewish people were crossing over out of Egypt and they were about to hit the Yam Suf, so it says that the Yam Suf didn't want to split, but in the merit of mezuzah, the Yam Suf split. It says that it split into three portions, and there was walls in front of them. They were walking and there were walls, and the walls on the right split on the merit of the mezuzah. The walls on the left, it says, split in the merit of a different mitzvah, but the walls on the right split in the merit of the mezuzah. So now, I don't know about you, but I always was taught that the reason the Yam Suf split is because Nachshon B'Aminadab was willing to jump in. But it says here that in the merit of them, you know, adhering to the mitzvah and the mezuzah, the Yam Suf was ready to split. So I want to ask you, what connection does this Yam Suf splitting have to do with mezuzah? What do you guys think? What connection does the sea splitting have to do with mezuzah? What action through the mezuzah would make the sea split? What is the point of the mezuzah? What's the point of it? What is its purpose? To help a person have clarity before he enters into the house, right? Excellent. Exactly. So you all said that, you all put those pieces together. But the point is that, what's the point of the mezuzah? Our question is like this. The sea split because they were going to accept upon themselves the merit of mezuzah. Now, what connection does the sea splitting have to the action of mezuzah? The answer is, what's the point of mezuzah? As we said, the mezuzah of the temple, right? We said the whole point of mezuzah was for a moment to give a person a glimpse, a concept of focus before you enter into the house. So when the Jewish people were able to be focused and enter into the sea with total awareness and belief in God, it connected straight to the mitzvah mezuzah and said, okay, now I have a reason to split it. Meaning, it's those both actions that are linked together. There are many actions that they could have said, no, let us split because of, you know, it could pick an array of mitzvot that the sea should split for. Maybe candlelighting. Maybe Korban Pesach. Maybe sacrifices. No, the mezuzah specifically. Why? Because they're both the same thing. The point is that before you enter into the sea, before you enter into a place, you pause for a minute and you think about the Shin Dalad Yud, Shamar Le'olamot Dai, that he tells you all, that he gives you exactly what you need in the place you're about to enter, and that awakens the same zechuyot, the same merits that the mezuzah has. So, there's also a reason, we'll see at the end what the Rambam is. The Rambam says that there's a reason that it's specifically placed in the doorpost, meaning this could be anywhere, maybe on the door itself. What's the specific, you know, sanctity of the doorpost? The Rambam says at the following. The Rambam is actually to be found in this place. Look at the interesting place of the Rambam. Read to you where the halakha is. It's very interesting. It's Rambam. This is chapter 6. Right, it's halakha 13. So the Rambam says the following. This is the words that the Rambam uses. A person must be careful with the mitzvah mezuzah, since all are obligated in it, for everyone, all of the time. How could you always be obligated to the mitzvah mezuzah? If you don't have a house, you're not obligated. If you don't have a, there's many situations that, no, but the answer is the mitzvah applies to us all. Why is that so? When he goes in and he leaves, he sees the oneness of the Almighty, and he remembers his love, and the Rambam uses these words, and wakes up from his slumber. The Rambam says the point of mezuzah is to wake up someone from their slumber. Everyone is obligated in this concept, says the Rambam. The Rambam says everyone is obligated to be woken up from their slumber. So in essence, every time we pass by a doorpost, there's something there screaming out, wake up from your slumber. Focus for a minute. Shin Dalad Yud, Shamar Le'olam Ozo, he who told the world to stop, he's giving you exactly what you need. Right? It's a moment of focus. It's a moment to see that this world is run by the Almighty. Within the mezuzah is the passage of Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, which is again the oneness of God. Before you go in, it's there. And you should know that nothing stands forever. In addition, the Rambam says something very interesting. Why is the mezuzah placed on the doorpost? The doorpost is a place where you're constantly going in and out of, all the time. In and out, in and out. To resemble to us the concept that nothing stands forever. Everything is once here today, gone tomorrow. That's what the mezuzah resembles. For us to leave, so in essence, every doorpost that you pass by is almost like a full-fledged, you know, class on Jewish philosophy that's helping you to focus. And it's all put together with all these, you know, with all these little hints that are placed. The fact that it's placed on three, as we said. Three is the concept that God's hand is within something. When something happens three times, it's already, you already see that it's, you know, God's hand is on His presence. The reason it's placed on the top third of the doorpost, if you notice, the mezuzah is not placed on the bottom like the menorah in Chanukah. It's placed on the top. You walk by, it's on the top third. Again, the number of three. Like the fact that certain mitzvot don't need it, like the sukkah we had mentioned, right? We said, why does the mezuzah not need? Why does the sukkah not need a mezuzah? The answer is because what's the point of the mezuzah? The point of mezuzah is to remind the person, right, to focus that what he has in this house, what he has in this place, is enough for him. Happy with what the Almighty gives you, and that's the concept of sukkah. It's the same thing. There's no need for it. You're living with, you know, lack of materialism. We spoke about the concept of three. Why three posts? Right? Why does it have to be on the outside? We had asked as well. The reason it has to be on the outside is because we want you to focus on this before you step into the house. Before you, you know, today they have the mirrors, the mirror name, they put on the front door like a mirror with your name, the family name, so you're able to like look at yourself and see if you look good in a sense. You know, fix your hair, maybe see if everything's tidied up, and then walk into the house. So the mezuzah is almost like a mirror of what your soul should be saying before you walk in. Take a second and you focus and say, I'm walking into my house now. Whatever I have in here is what is intended for me. This is a spiritual house. It's a place where the atmosphere of Israel dwells, if it's a house that is proper, right? And we said, why specifically the name of Shin Dalet Yud? Because that's the name that resembles that God told the world, up until here is what you need. not more than that. And that's the name of the Almighty that's placed on the outside of the mezuzah. One question that we do have to answer is, why is it that you only place the mezuzah after the house is built? Why not place it on the doorpost and then set it up? So the answer is because Judaism, the way that the outlook, the Jewish outlook of what Judaism tells you, is for you to have what you have. Enjoy the materialistic world. All I'm asking for is, after you have what you need, and you've created your beautiful house, put a little sign to use it for spiritual matters. Meaning, build your house the way you want. Afterwards, you have what you need, just use it properly for spiritual matters. Use what you have for the proper focus. Right? That's where the mezuzah is. That answers the question, is why it's placed only after the house is built, and you don't just put it on the doorpost. I want to end off with a true story that was told by Rav Yechazkel Levenstein. He was a mashgiach of a yeshiva here in Israel, and he had stayed a little bit of time in America. So he was taking a cab here in Israel, and when he was taking a cab, you know, it's always every cab experience in this country is like another story. I think there's a book called, like, you know, the Ride with My Cab. Somebody wrote a book with all, like, his cab stories. So he gets into this cab, and the guy says to him, "Rabbi, when I finished the army, me and my friends, we decided we're going to travel the world. Me and a whole bunch of my army buddies, we decided we're going to Africa." And they went to the jungles of Africa. How exciting is that? You know, I'm from New York, like the most exciting thing I have is like Borough Park or something. You know, it's like really out there. We're going to go to Africa. We go to Africa and we're traveling through the whole forest. We're sleeping on the floor, you know, with our backpacks. We're eating berries. Like, that's what he said. Like, we're really living it out. So a whole bunch of us are sleeping one night and we wake up. One of our friends, Yigal, his name was, is screaming at the top of his lungs. We're all sleeping around, you know, around together, and he wakes up screaming. We look at him. We see that there's a huge boa constrictor wrapping around his body. It's a true story. A huge, and he's choking him to death. So with his last effort, he's like screaming. So we're all staring at this huge snake, terrified, don't know what to do. We try trying to yank him off, and it's not going. Meanwhile, all the while, he's just squeezing him. And we see, you know, we see him losing his, slowly he's drifting away. So one of us, he says, I don't remember who it was, one of us turns to Yigal and says, "Yigal, you're going to die. Say the Shema Yisrael." So here they are in the jungles of Africa, a bunch of guys from Israel. One guy is wrapped with a boa constrictor and he's screaming at him, "Say the Shema Yisrael." So Yigal says the Shema Yisrael, true story, says the Shema Yisrael, Shem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. And as he finishes the last word, tells him the snake unravels off. He unravels off, goes off, and he slithers away. And the cab driver says to him, to Rabbi, "You know, Rabbi, my friend Yigal, he's religious now. He keeps Shabbat. He does this, he does that. It's amazing. What a miracle." So Rabbi Chatzka Levinson says to him, "Nu, and what about you?" So the cab driver goes, "What do you mean? It didn't happen to me. What does that have to do with me?" The point is quite clearly that somebody could have all the messages in the world from the Almighty. If you choose not to see it, you won't see it. The mezuzah is the same thing. It's a screaming message. We've talked about the name of the Almighty from the outside. We've talked about the fact, the place that it's placed, why it's placed in that fashion, how it resembles, how the temple ties into it as well. We've seen stories with uncles. But if a person chooses not to be awakened by the mezuzah, then it won't have any effect on him whatsoever. He'll just go through it and go at it. And the Rambam says this is a tool that's used to wake up a person from his slumber. But it's all depending on if you want to see it. So if we choose to, it turns into mezuzah. If not, it's just a doorpost. Okay, guys.